All right, well, here we go on a Monday. Hey, everybody, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Welcome back to Make Me Smart. I am back. It is good to be back. Making today make sense is what we do on this podcast.
Yeah, and I'm Mariel Segarra. It's exciting to be here again. And welcome back, Kai, from vacation.
Yeah, I was. I was away. We went to Spain. Barcelona, Madrid, had a fabulous time. Went to an FC Barcelona game. Really enjoyed it. I did catch a little cold, though. You could probably hear that. But it was really good. It was good to be away. Good to be back, as always. All right. So what's the news? You go first. You got a couple. I got a couple. You go first.
Okay. So I saw this piece about Etsy, the platform where individual small retailers, they sell things like purses and candles and stuff like that. A bunch of Etsy sellers are going on strike. At least that's what they're calling it, because they don't exactly work for Etsy, right? But they're calling it a strike. It's about 14,000 of them out of 5.3 million. And they say that they're not okay with Etsy raising its transaction fees. The company says that it needs the money so that it can market the seller's products. But these retailers are like, actually, you know, we don't need more marketing because I'm just an individual, you know, candle maker, and I can have all the business I can handle, maybe. So I don't like that you're taking money away from me and diverting it towards marketing. And I think what is really interesting about this is the value of a platform like this. If you're a small retailer, you kind of have to play with the big companies, like whether it's Amazon or Facebook or, you know, Etsy. And it's like you own your own business, but you're really not totally independent, because when on a whim, or maybe not, maybe that's unfair, maybe not on a whim, but when one of these big companies decides to make a change, it can have a huge impact on your business. And that's just part of the game.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. And it's, you know, small business people somehow always get screwed, and the platforms have all the power. And it'll be interesting to see how this one turns out.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's really going to, like I said, 14,000 out of 5.3 million. I'm not sure that it's going to change any minds at Etsy, but there might be, out of those 14,000, some of those sellers might just say, you know what, this isn't worth it anymore. And I've heard from retailers like that before, who they get enough attention or enough sales on Etsy that ultimately then they say, hey, I'm going over to my own website, and yep, their customers follow them. So that could happen.
Yep. Yeah, no, totally could. All right, that's item one. You're all retail today. Go ahead. Go to the next one.
Yeah, so Kmart, I just saw a story that reminded people that there are only 3 Kmart stores left now.
Wow, is that right?
Unbelievable.
That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah, and there were at one time about, I think, 2,000 store Kmarts. It just made me think about how my brother used to work at Kmart when we were in high school, stocking shelves or whatever. It was one of his first jobs. And a lot of us have memories of these retailers. They became a part of our lives in some way. We have either nice memories of them or annoying memories of them, like when I worked at Hollister and had to deal with that awful music and the perfume that was just like completely unbearable and gave me a headache, and it was always dark in there, you know. But it's, you have these really distinct memories, and then the companies are just gone like that.
Yeah. God, 3 stores. That's kind of wild. That's like sort of, they're on Blockbuster watch now, right? And in 3 years, there's going to be some story about the only Kmart left on the planet, and it's going to be in some small town in like North Dakota.
Oh, I know, it'll probably be like a tourist attraction at that point.
That's right. As is, I think that Blockbuster that used to be in Oregon, the last one, I don't even know if it closed. Might even still be open. I don't even know. Okay, so I've got 2, one of which is a quickie, but it's a sign of virus to come. So Philadelphia is going to reinstate its indoor mask mandate effective next week. And I just think we all, having been enjoying now a number of months of being able to not have to, you can if you choose, right? I do choose to wear my mask in the grocery store and stuff, but you don't have to if you don't want to. And now Philadelphia is saying you kind of have to. And I think we all just need to be ready for that, because it will be an attitude adjustment for a whole lot of people, you know. And obviously we're going to see it in a lot of blue states, probably not in as many red states, but I think people are going to have some adjusting to do. And so that's my one quickie news item. My number 2 news item today, it fits under the heading of Elon Musk really is a jerk. And I think I've said that before on this podcast. I know I've said it to Molly on Marketplace, but definitely on this podcast. So We learned last week that Elon Musk now owns 9.2% of the company. And the company, being not really stupid, right, the CEO Parag Agarwal and the board of directors said, holy cow, Elon Musk, the richest man in the world, owns 10% of our company, 9.2%. We need to get him inside the tent, as it were, because Mr. Musk has a history of just lobbing grenades at Twitter, especially recently. And they figure, look, let's have him on board and helping to run the company rather than just taking pot shots. And they said, we're going to invite him to join the board. And as far as we knew, that's what was going to happen last week. And then this morning, Parag Agarwal writes a note to Twitter staff that he then puts out on the internet that says, and this is just the amazing part. It says, Elon Musk is not going to be joining our board. And then he says, the board felt that it would be better to have Mr. Musk as a fiduciary to the company. That is to say, having a responsibility to the company and all of its shareholders, a fiduciary responsibility, that would be the best for all concerned. And reading between the lines, it doesn't take you very much to be able to decide that Elon Musk, who could buy Twitter and have $150 billion left over, he could buy Twitter with cash tomorrow. It's worth $37 billion. And Elon Musk has a personal net worth of $200 billion. Elon Musk could buy Twitter tomorrow and do whatever he wants to do with it. But now he's going to stay on the outside. He's not going to take this board seat. He's not going to limit his stock purchases. He's not going to be responsible to the company and all of its shareholders. And he's just going to keep lobbing grenades. And I think it's a super interesting example of what's the politest way to put this? Having a lot of money doesn't make you necessarily a good guy or smart. How about that?
Yeah.
And thus Elon Musk is a jerk.
I just feel like there are so many controversies with Elon Musk that I end up so confused about.
Yep.
Like it's one of those things where you log on to Twitter or whatever and you're like, oh God, what happened now? What did he do now?
Yeah. And look, Musk has a history specifically with his being the CEO of Tesla, right? So he runs two big companies. Well, he runs three companies, right? He runs Tesla, he runs SpaceX, and then he runs the Boring Company, which is that tunneling super fast, you know, transit company. Anyway, he's gotten into a lot of trouble for his shenanigans having to do with Tesla. And I think he has just decided, specifically on Twitter, and I think he's just decided, screw it. I don't care what the SEC says. I don't care what the Twitter board says. I'm just going to have a good old time because I am the richest man in the world. And that's his mindset. And so I think that's kind of where he's going with that. I think that's what he's all about, 100%. That's all I'm saying.
Must be good to be rich.
He's the richest man in the world, but it doesn't make you not a jerk. That's what I think. Anyway, that's enough of my rant. Charlton, what do you got? All right.
Okay, so I saw this video on Instagram a friend shared with me of there's a woman, she goes to a set of a rock formation, I think in Mexico, and she's laying face down on the rocks. Her arms are holding her up, kind of in, they call that upward dog position in yoga.
Yeah.
And then the water comes up right behind her and splashes in just the perfect way. And what she's doing is recreating this iconic scene from The Little Mermaid.
Yep.
And the music is in the background. It's pretty perfect. But it just reminded me of being a kid and having these really iconic scenes, especially in Disney movies, and trying to recreate them at home. Like, this woman got to live the dream. I'm thinking she's probably around my age, was a kid in the 90s, and this was like a wish fulfillment for her. But there was, I mean, when I was a kid, I used to pretend I was Belle from Beauty and the Beast. Anytime I was in a library, or one time I jumped off my dresser and pretended I could fly.
No,
and
did you really?
Flapped my arms like wings because I thought that maybe I'd be able to fly. Like
I'm
in,
sure, sure
like in Peter
that,
Pan.
Actually. I'm sure we all know that.
Yeah. And I was not injured by the grace of God, but I thought this was kind of amazing and I wanted to find the rock formation myself and make this happen.
We will put that one on the show page because it's quite the shot. It's quite the shot. All right. So mine came to me. So I was off Twitter for a week. So I found mine this morning waiting for me in my Twitter feed. It's a tweet from a guy who follows me. His name is David Edwards. And look, if you follow me on Twitter, you know I tweet about two things food-wise. One is beer, and the other one is do not cook fish in the microwave at work. In fact, don't cook fish in the microwave anywhere ever, but David Edwards sent this one to me, and it's a song written guy by the name of written by a guy by the name of Tom McGovern, and it starts off with, just because you can't really hear it, we're going to play like 30 seconds of it. It starts off, oh, there it is. Hang on a minute. Hang on a minute. There you go. All right, hang on. Hang on. So it starts with him saying, I'm in my studio apartment, just because you sort of can't understand it. So here it goes. Charlton, hit it.
I've got some salmon I can make.
I've got some salmon.
But not long after I get started. I know that I've made a mistake.
Now everything smells like salmon. My shirts, my couch, my sheets. If I had a couple hundred more square feet, I imagine that this would not happen. Everything smells like salmon. Straight up salmon. Smell it from the bed to the door. When you're living in a space that's not much more than a cabin. Well, sometimes this happens. Everything smells like salmon.
That's there a bop. Go.
Everything isn't that a bop? I kind of like the tune, frankly. Points to this guy for being creative and finding things that can rhyme with salmon. Anyway, his name is Tom McGovern. That was on my Twitter feed today. Thank you, David Edwards. I really appreciate you sending that because it just made me laugh. Don't microwave or cook salmon anywhere in a small apartment. That's all I'm saying.
I was saying to Rima the other day, she was in the office in LA and she brought in like eggs in a Ziploc bag.
Yeah. Oh, I got yelled at for doing that once.
It was just kind of gross. And I was like, do not let Kai see you doing that, especially if you microwave them. Like,
that's so funny. All right. So look, so true confession, and then we'll get out of here because I got to go take a kid to a doctor's appointment. About, oh God, it's got to be like 6 or 8 years ago. I went through a pure protein phase with my diet. And so I was eating all hard boiled egg whites for lunches every day. So I brought like 6 eggs in a Ziploc bag and I opened them up. And people were like yelling and screaming at me because the whole office, Bridget probably remembers, the whole office smelled like boiled eggs. And so I don't do that anymore.
Yeah, that's nasty.
Anyway, yeah, it's nasty. Anyway, so that's enough. That's enough. Oh, Bridget's slacking now. I don't remember this. Yeah, it was bad. I got a lot of feedback, shall we say. Anyway, that's it for us today. We're back tomorrow. Me and Marielle, deep dive into, oh, man. So we're going to do Bitcoin and crypto and rich people and the rest of us. And a lot of crypto coming tomorrow because I just think it's so interesting and it's the wave of the future. But spoiler alert, I don't think it's ready yet. I don't think we're ready for it, and I don't think crypto is ready for us. That's what
I think. Yeah, and specifically like what it means for cities that are trying to attract crypto wealth.
Yep.
Yeah.
Miami, New York. Yeah.
Puerto Rico in San Juan.
Oh yeah, Puerto Rico. Yeah, for sure. Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, so tell us what you thought about today's show. You can send us a voice memo or email to makemesmart@marketplace.org, or you can call and leave a voice message, 508-UB-SMART.
All right, first day back at work in the can. Make Me Smart is produced by Marissa Cabrera with help from Mark A. Green, our interns Tiffany Bowie. Today's program was engineered by Charlton Thorpe.
Our senior producer is Bridget Botner, and the director of On Demand is Donna Tam.
There we go. Boom.
We got to get you some cough syrup or something.
Well, I've got 12-hour cough syrup, although I am kind of at the end of it because I was up super early this morning because I was jet lagged. But I had a glass of water. I had some, I don't even know.